morning. It's Carrie Meldon with Law Talk Live. We're here on a overcast Saturday morning in middle of July. I've got a great guest this morning, so I will hopefully introduce him in a few minutes. And I think the listeners out there are going to be really interested to hear who we have on and why we have him on today. But before we do that, I just wanted to once again let the listeners know out there that there is free giveaways on the Meldon Law Facebook and Instagram pages. If you ever want to get, I think we're giving away a 3-day vacation to Margaritaville or something ridiculous. I don't know how we're doing it, but apparently we've got this incredible vacation giveaway. Don't hold me to it because I'm not sure, but I heard our marketing director talking about it. So if you want to find out, go to our Facebook pages, and I'm sure it'll be released sometime soon. And there's always free entries, and we're also giving away free gift certificates to Spurrier's, Harry's. We have free giveaways for the sporting events in the fall. So make sure you stay tuned to our social media. Today's show, we actually do not have any phones available because the phone system is down. I was just told by Nick, the manager here at Odyssey in Gainesville, that the phones are down today. So it's going to be more of a talk show type show today. But I think it's going to be really, really informative. And I want to jump into a couple things and then move into our guest. First of all, today's topic that we always have every week, if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see that we always preview what our topic of the week's going to be is, if a police officer tells me to step out of my vehicle, do I legally have to? And the answer to this question, in my opinion, is probably yes. Generally speaking, the officers have a very low threshold in order to order someone out of a car. There is a doctrine called reasonable suspicion, and there was a Supreme Court case, I believe, gosh, it must be 50 years ago, Terry v. Ohio, which talked about basically stop and frisk, and it extended to police vehicle searches. And for them to get you out of the vehicle, not only, it might not just be reasonable suspicion, sometimes they're able to do it under the doctrine of police safety in certain circumstances where it's more safe for them to get everybody out of the vehicle instead of be running information on the driver if they've committed a traffic infraction. However, there is a caveat. If the stop was illegal later on, if you hire an attorney, and we have criminal defense attorneys here at Meldon Law, we can challenge the stop and maybe get it thrown out after the fact. So my advice is, if a police officer tells you to step out of your vehicle, you probably should do it. And on the back end, if you want to hire an attorney to try to challenge it, you're well within your constitutional rights to do so. And I urge you to do so if you feel like you were illegally stopped, because law enforcement officers abide by the same constitution as we do. And that means that we all have to follow the same rules within our legal system. So whenever a police officer is, advising a citizen to do so, he does have some constitutional constraints. As well as he has enumerated powers, so it goes both ways.
There's a somewhat famous saying amongst attorneys, right, Carrie, which is, don't argue with the officer. Let your lawyer argue for you in court.
Correct. Right? And I can tell you, the only time I ever had a client sent to jail while I was in court was when he decided to argue on his own, and the judge was having none of it. So those are wise words from Dan Wiseman. So before we go any further in the show, I want to introduce our guest. Without further ado, this is Dan Wiseman. And Dan Wiseman is one of my dearest friends, my oldest friends. He is born and raised here in Gainesville. We went to middle school together. We went to elementary school together. We graduated from high school. We won a tennis state championship together. He went to UF undergrad, then joined the Army, was in the 101st, was deployed in Iraq, ended up rising to the level of captain, right?
Yes, that's right, Carrie.
Was a captain and led troops in Iraq, and then came back. He had a short stint in teaching Ranger school, over in the panhandle, and then decided to go to UF Law School, where he met his lovely wife, Olivia, who is now in-house counsel for University of Florida, which is a whole, especially with labor matters, which is a whole nother topic that we can talk about. But needless to say, they're an incredible family, Olivia and Dan. And Dan and Olivia have two kids, Henry and Emmett, who both attend public school here
in Gainesville, probably about a mile away from the studio. And I can tell you, when I was growing up, Dan's mom probably lived a half a mile away from the studio.
Yeah, buddy, they're Talbot Tigers. Henry and Emmett are Talbot Tigers right up the road, although Henry will be going on to Fort Clark this upcoming year. And I'll tell you what, man, time flies. I'm not ready for him to be a middle schooler quite yet.
Unfortunately, you can't stop time.
No kidding.
You can stop a lot of stuff, not time. So the reason that we have Dan on the show today is for a very exciting reason. There is an open seat in the 8th Judicial Circuit, which is, I think, how many counties? What counties are those, Dan?
So there is Alachua, Levy, Gilchrist, Baker, Bradford, and Union. Those are the counties that comprise the 8th Judicial Circuit. Mm-hmm. And there is a judge race afoot right now, which is a pretty cool thing. It's a pretty rare thing.
Yes, very rare.
Normally, the judges are appointed by the governor, but at this point in time, the overwhelming amount of times, that's how judges get on the bench. But this particular time, just because of some timing related issues, there is an open race for an open seat, and so it's really cool. The people of North Central Florida get to choose who their next trial judge is going to be.
Right, and he's running for circuit court judge, which is a trial position. It's also a very important position in the 8th Judicial Circuit, because a lot of those listeners out there will be dealing with people in the circuit court at some point in their lives. And so Dan is one of four candidates that is up for election coming up. And when's the actual voting date?
So everybody knows to vote in November.
Right.
But what is unique about this election is that, it's an off-presidential year, it's a midterm year, and this election, me and the other judge candidates are going to be on the primary ballots in August.
Mm-hmm.
So vote by mail, I think, is already afoot.
Right.
Early voting starts a couple weeks before August 23rd. And then August 23rd is the actual voting day. So
August 23rd, then, is the actual day, but you can vote before that.
Yes. And, we've opened up early voting a lot and pretty effectively around here to give people more convenient times to vote. And whether someone is registered with one party or another party, or whether someone's an independent, right? If you're going to make it out to vote for your city commissioners or your county commissioners, mm-hmm, or your school board members, mm-hmm, okay, you will see the judicial race and me and the other judge candidates on that same ballot in August, the upcoming immediate August ballot.
And it's a nonpartisan race, meaning that you, under the canon of judicial ethics, you're not supposed to have any partisanship with regards to Republican versus Democrat.
Yeah, I think that the judge races are like the ultimate nonpartisan of the nonpartisans. Like a lot, mm-hmm, of the city commission races and county commission races are nonpartisan races too. But, because the watchword of a judge is impartiality, right, and even-handedness and fairness, the judge races are particularly nonpartisan. Right.
So before we go into a little bit about Dan's philosophy and kind of a little bit about how he believes the court is organized and the role of the judge, I want to talk a little bit about Dan's background. So Dan, you ended up, when you were going through undergrad at UF, after you graduated at Gainesville High School here in Gainesville, you at first did not know what you were that you were going to run for judge or be a lawyer at that point, did you?
No, I didn't. And I have never, even once I became an attorney, I was not one of, the attorneys who always sort of had an eye set, on being a step or two up from the arena of battle, right? I've never been a person with a particular eye on a judgeship, but when we started college, right, I was here at UF, you were at William & Mary, mm-hmm, for a bit, right? We must have been about 19. Me and a couple of the Gainesville guys took a Europe trip, mm-hmm, right? Typical, pack frames and, eating in Europe on $5 a day, kind
right.
of thing, and, taking the trains around to different cities. And when you're growing up in a good community, and you're a kid, a kid does not ever know that he's growing up in a great community, like, while he's a kid, right?
Right.
Unless you're just some incredibly special person, right? And we took a Euro trip, me and a couple of the guys, and, you know, a lot changed for me. We were in Paris, and I was thinking about how I was walking the streets where my mother's father, who was a European of Jewish ancestry, mm-hmm. I was walking the streets in Paris where he had to flee the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Prague, which is an ancient city, and this was just after, you know, the Soviet Union had collapsed. And we were in this beautiful ancient city, but I saw the people with just this look of despair and desperation on their faces. I saw these beautiful ancient buildings and churches, you know, with pollution and smog, you know, thick on the walls. And a lot just changed for me, and a lot really, it was like a jigsaw puzzle all kind of came into place, and I really had a moment where I realized that, you know, we need to live in a good society together. And for that to happen, you know, we have to act right, we have to govern right, we have to treat each other right, and we have to serve, mm-hmm. right? We have to serve if we want to make a good society for us and for our kids and for our children and our children's children. And that was sort of like a moment for me when I must have been just about 19 or whatever that sort of changed me a little bit and sort of inspired me to go and join the service.
And when we get back, I want to follow up on this story because it's a really great story. And we'll be back in about 1 minute to... with Dan Wiseman, who's running for circuit court judge.
Everybody knows that Meldon Law is the only official injury law firm partner of the Florida Gators. However, since we first opened our doors in 1971, we've been your community partner as well. With over 600 scholarships awarded through our Meldon Law Scholar Athlete Program, as well as our Veterans Making a Difference initiative, Meldon Law now has offices in Gainesville, Ocala, and Lake City. MeldonLaw.com, where we won't back down.
Good morning. This is attorney Kerry Meldon with Meldon Law. We're here at Law Talk Live, and we have a special guest in the studio this morning, Dan Wiseman, who is running for the 8th Judicial Circuit Court position, which is a very rare election. Not many times is there an open seat that comes about in the state of Florida where you can vote for a bevy of different choices. And in this case, Dan Wiseman is threw his hat in the ring, and he is going to be running in the August election, the primary. So make sure if you're there, you check out the ballot. You can see him on there. So with that being said, he was talking about he had visited Europe, which kind of inspired his journey towards service. I will tell you, out of all of our friends we all graduated with, we all had, you know, different traits and probably different things that made us who we are. But Dan, out of all of us, was probably the one that joined the Army, was the only one that joined the military. I think I know. We always talk about it, but a lot of people talk the talk, but not many people walk the walk. And so what Dan did was join the Army. It wasn't just like he was just doing it just to build a resume. He was actually in the infantry. I'll let Dan talk a little bit more about that. So let's talk a little bit about how that decision was finalized to become an Army.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Army, the Army gave me everything I asked for and maybe a few things I didn't, right? I was very inspired by my other grandfather's service. He was an American soldier in World War II. This is my father's father. And, you know, he was, he served in the Ardennes, in the Battle of the Bulge. He was a combat medic. And, you know, he was a guy who was a little bit of a tough nut to crack. You know, his experiences seasoned him and hardened him. And he was one of my heroes. And, you know, getting to know him and getting him to open up to me about his stories of service and brotherhood really inspired me to to go in, because I believe that we owe our grandfather's generation an incredible debt, an incredible debt of honor and service and gratitude. And so, I volunteered to go in. I asked for the infantry, and they gave it to me. You know, I asked for airborne school and ranger school, and they gave me that too. I asked to go to Korea, and I was in Korea for about 18 months and had a couple of great platoons over there. Like you mentioned, I came back stateside to work at ranger school. And, you know, my family hadn't seen me for about a year and a half. But, you know, the way that the ball bounces is that that was when the war kicked off and they needed lieutenants. So I ended up getting a platoon with the 101st Airborne for the conduct of the ground war in Iraq and, you know, the time period that followed that. And, you know, I loved it. I loved it. I loved being in the infantry. I loved being in the Army. I met just great people. I had great soldiers. I had great sergeants. And it was a real formative experience for me. And after I concluded my service, I had been accepted to law school back here at UF. And I always wanted to be a prosecutor at that point in time. That was my next, you know, thing. My next place where I felt like I could do some good, right? Because just something about people doing violent things and breaking the social contract and tearing apart our communities, like, you know, it got me fired up. And I felt like that was a place where I could do some good. So I came back here for law school. And after that, I actually got hired by the Attorney General's office to be one of their prosecutors, and they call it the Office of Statewide Prosecution.
Yes.
It's kind of a specialized unit, for lack of any other better way to say it. And
there are high profile cases that you're taking from the local state attorney's offices. So if a local state attorney's office gets a case where there's a lot of moving parts, in my experience as a former prosecutor, that's when the Office of the Attorney General would step in and take over.
Yeah, and there's a rough analogy you could make to the federal prosecutors in that the way that the federal prosecutors have to have interstate jurisdiction to prosecute a case typically, statewide prosecution has to have multi-circuit jurisdiction within Florida. So, you know, typically if people are treating crime like a team sport and doing it across county and circuit lines, then statewide can exert jurisdiction. And what I ended up basically doing was building racketeering cases against street gangs. And whenever a community would have a bad gang problem, I sort of got to be known as the guy that they could send their officers to. And me and their detectives would do a deep dive on the gang problem in their community. We would build long-term investigations and do monster cases where we would then go basically arrest, you know, 10, 15, 20 guys, as many guys in the gang that we could get righteous charges on. We'd arrest them all and remove them from the community, and I would prosecute them all in court together.
And so I've got one more break. I've got one more break. All right, Rob, I thought we were going to eliminate that one today, but we'll do it next time. But let's go back. We'll be back in 10 minutes, so do not leave the program. We're going to one last commercial, and we'll be back. I forgot.
Since 1971, Meldon Law has been dedicated to giving back to our community. Our Veterans Making a Difference program honors the over 20,000 veterans in North Central Florida. We're here for our veterans, our community, and we'll be there when you need someone on your side after a serious accident. Meldon Law, the only official injury law firm partner of the Florida Gators, now with offices in Gainesville, Ocala, and Lake City.
And we're back here in the last segment of Law Talk Live. This is attorney Kerry Meldon with Meldon Law. I'm here with the 8th Judicial Circuit Court candidate, Dan Wiseman, who has been talking about his story, his story of growing up in Gainesville, of his military service in the Army, where he was deployed to Korea as well as Iraq. And in terms of the, or was it Afghanistan or Iraq?
Iraq.
Iraq, yeah. And then in terms of his After he graduated University of Florida Law School, he became a very young statewide prosecutor in terms of, you know, most of the statewide prosecutors were much older than him. And he was a RICO prosecutor. In fact, he was, I think he got an award for Gang Prosecutor of the Year for the state of Florida at some point.
That's actually correct. Yeah. And, you know, I guess what kind of ties it all together is that my experience learning how to work with sergeants in the Army and learning how to have to, you know, work with and lead people who were more seasoned than me really kind of translated well into my experience as a prosecutor who pretty much got hired right out of law school to do complex cases. Now I would have to work with detectives who had been in law enforcement for 10, 15, 20 years. And I was able to kind of build good relationships with them the same way I was able to build good relationships with my sergeants in the infantry.
Right. And one of the things that makes Dan unique is that a lot of people who start off with this prosecutor's office stay with the prosecutor's office until they become a judge. That's normally how most judges are appointed. They come from the state attorney's office and they go right into the judicial into a judicial seat. Well, Dan didn't take that step. He actually went into private practice. He had private business ownership as well. So where Dan has, I think, a unique experience that he has experience in both the public and the private sector.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I don't know how many counties in this state you've practiced in. Probably a lot.
A lot, yes.
I don't know how many judges you've been in front of.
A
probably
lot.
A lot. But I've been in front of a lot, too, right? And what I've noticed over the years is that often, not always, but often, the best judges to practice in front of, the ones that are like a joy to practice in front of, and the ones that are, you know, like a beacon of fairness that makes everyone feel good, are usually the judges who have been around the block and who have broad experience before taking the bench.
Right.
So, you know, my time as a prosecutor was really formative for me, and it was good for me, right? I know what it means like to have the pressure of having to go and get justice for a crime victim, and I know what it means to kind of have to carry that weight of holding up the social contract for a person who's been wrong.
And you have respect for law enforcement with your interactions with
Yes,
them.
And good relationships, yeah. Right? And I understand what perspective they're coming from, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I would have done my time as a prosecutor and then just held up my hand and said, okay, put me on the bench now, I mean, I could have done a good job and I would have been fair, but it would have been, you know, fairness seasoned only by one perspective.
Correct.
Basically. And so my experience in the private sector has made me, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm no Atticus Finch, okay?
I'll call you Atticus Finch.
You know, like, no one is going to say that you're just a complete attorney, but my time on the other side of the aisle, my time defending folks, my time working in the civil courts, and doing everything else and a whole bunch of things has seasoned me in a way that I would never have been able to achieve without that extra experience and without that across the aisle experience.
Well, one of the cool things that Dan did is a few years ago, he actually opened a private business that employed only military veterans. And it was a situation where it was pretty incredible, the whole concept of that you're able to employ a lot of people who are otherwise maybe not employable because of their PTSD or things like that. And I thought that was a really cool thing that you did.
The cool thing about that, it was that I saw it gave these guys a chance to connect with each other, you know, in a way that was unique and special and not the normal workplace environment for them. But,
yeah.
You know, in terms of the courts, right, one of the cool things we have around here is called Veterans Treatment Court, right? Which is a position that is kind of quarterbacked by a circuit court judge, right? And the way that we have other specialty courts, you know, like Drug Diversion Court and Mental Health Court, here in the 8th, we have Veterans Treatment Court too, which I think is really cool and it's unique and it's, you know, it's uniquely tailored to help veterans, you know, who just kind of need, you know, some channeling, some guardrails, and some support to get themselves, you know, back on their feet.
I mean, we have learned a lot, and, you know, I always feel there's a price that we have to pay at some point for the service of people in our country that underwent, you know, almost inhumane type treatment in certain circumstances. You see it all the time. I mean, gosh, you know, in terms of chemical exposure or in terms of, you know, basically violent warfare. And there's a lot going on in combat, even since World War II, that people, we kind of sweep it under the rug. And I think it's good that you have actual experience within the framework, which gives you a different perspective than someone like me.
I mean, you're right, and I do. And one of my favorite things about private practice has been the latitude that I have had to be able to be there for my fellow veterans, for their legal needs, whatever those needs might be. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, when I think of what I'm looking for in a judge is I'm looking for a person who has a lot of different gears, right?
Right.
You know, and as someone who's been a prosecutor, you know, if someone comes in front of me and I'm on the bench and someone has done like something terrible, senseless and violent, and he has a terrible record and the evidence is there, you know, I'm going to know what to do.
Right.
Right. If someone comes in front of me and they're not guilty, or they're just a person who, you know, got off on the wrong track and, you know, doesn't need to get buried under the jail, but he just needs some guardrails, right, and some focus, you know, I'm going to know what to do in that circumstance too.
Right.
You know what I mean? When we talk about the role of the trial court judge, there's a whole bunch of different things that they do in a whole bunch of different places that they can get put by the chief judge. But the big three are civil court, mm-hmm. family law, and the criminal courts.
Mm-hmm.
And in the criminal courts, you're typically calling balls and strikes, right? You're typically telling the prosecutors, you know, what's hearsay, what's not. You're telling the defense attorneys what they can do. But when it comes to sentencing, that's where you want someone seasoned.
Well, Dan, we're going to have to get you back before the election so you can finish up. This went by way too quickly, but Dan Wiseman running for 8th Judicial Circuit Court, the judicial position, the election's in August. Make sure you look at the ballot, and Dan Wiseman running for Circuit Court Judge. So, Dan, thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you, Kerry.
All right. We're going to have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week at Law Talk Live. And in the meantime, as always, we're going to do a Go Gators send-off. So, go Gators!
Live from the Meldon Law Studios.
Meldon Law, the only official law firm partner of the Florida Gators.
This is News Talk 97.3 The Sky.